There comes a time in everyone's life when the world seems to be so large and your life so small. Life can close in and leave you lost and feeling alone, especially if there are health issues or financial strife that appear to be out of control. You're not alone, or are you, without hope or answers? All you have to do is take a moment to clear your thoughts and mind. Open your heart and receive God's love. The grace of God and the sacrifices of Jesus are right here for your ability to enjoy your life free of pain and suffering. The Holy Spirit is just waiting for you to ask for God's love and the grace over your life. This internet radio show is here for just this purpose: to enlighten, empower each and every one of you who seek such peace and harmony in your life. Ladies and gentlemen, Jim Hockaday is here to assist in your quest for salvation and God's grace. Welcome to the Abiding Presence Internet Radio Show. Good evening, everybody. It's another Tuesday night here in the barn on the horse ranch at an undisclosed location in the state of Oklahoma, USA. All right, the 11th of February, 2014. It is just about 8 o'clock and 1 minute and 53 seconds after the hour, standard time. Remember, we're still gaining a few seconds, about 30 to 50 seconds a day of daylight. And we're in the dog days of winter here in North America. Tonight, we're going to talk a little bit about history. And because there's a saying that if you don't understand history, then history can repeat itself. A lot of people use the term Monday morning quarterbacking. It's real easy to watch a football game or some kind of sporting event on the weekend and then talk about it afterwards on how they should have done this or they could have done that or how that was a bad play, that was a bad mistake. It's very easy to do that after the event is over. But there is value in that. There is tangible value in looking back at something. But it usually brings out the worst of it. The gleaning of the chaff, the calling of the herd to pick out what is wrong, to eliminate it. So that's what's left is a bumper crop of the fruit, the harvest, the quality of life is what we're talking about. There is a history to your choices. There's a history to the things that avail themselves to you. And more importantly, there is a history to the things that have not availed themselves to you. There is reason to sit down calmly, possibly swallow hard and take a breath. Perhaps you'll wipe a tear away when you recall all the times in your own personal history that perhaps after tonight's broadcast will avail themselves of a missed opportunity to spend some time with grace. There's a history to man, there's a history to civilization. And there is a history to Christianity. And notice that the three are separate yet equal. As man has evolved and technology has gotten greater, it seems our ability to be one with God is less and less. And this is never more apparent in today's world, is it, Jim?
No, it's becoming more apparent all the time. And in what you would call the religious world, you can see it more and more that people are buying into the world and just really swimming in things and getting caught up in materialism. And, you know, the interesting thing is all of it kind of makes you unaware of what's really going on. It's like you miss the forest, we've said this before, you miss the forest for a few little trees. And you don't really realize what's really going on in the forest. And it's really sad because I've been a part of this now for so many years that I'm still detoxing from this type of mentality. And it's very interesting because you can find yourself in moments of having wonderful experiences with God, and then literally like you turn a switch off and you find yourself right back in just pretty well conscious of nothing but your world, your job, your family, things that are going on, and you've lost sight of God. Now, that may sound a little bit strange because people would think, you know, you said family in there too. I mean, you're not supposed to forget your family. No, I'm not talking about forgetting them, but I'm talking about being so ever conscious of God and developing a relationship that even while you're with your family, you're with God too. And this is something that we're endeavoring to present on this show, something I'm walking into a degree and continue to get better every single week at walking in it more, where I'm learning to develop an understanding of who I am. How are you going to know God if you don't know who you are? And then developing a greater understanding of who God is. And it's very interesting because God can be with you all the time, even when you're doing some of the most menial tasks of life. Tonight on our show, it's kind of stirred up a little bit because of some things we were talking about here at the barn. And one of the things that just kind of stood out to me, and I guess it's because of a statement that I've made quite a bit when I'm out preaching, and I'll make that right here, which will then kind of, just feed itself right into the things that we were talking about beforehand. And that is, if you were to go to New York City, to Times Square, on a beautiful night that was clear where the stars were shining, and look up into the heavens to see the stars, you'd find it very difficult to see the stars because of all the man-made light. You know, Times Square is just lit up like a huge Christmas tree, you know, with all kinds of lights and billboards, you know, and neon signs and whatnot. But very interesting, all you got to do is go about 30 miles to the west into New York State and up into some of those wonderful mountains and foothills. And if you were there on a beautiful clear night, in the dark surrounding of the foothills and the mountains, if you were to look up at the stars, you'd see just a blanket of stars in the heavens. And how I relate that to what we're talking about tonight is very simple. The closer you are to society, the harder it will be to have an experience with God. To say it like this would be to say, man-made society. Man's responsible for all the lights in the city, but God's responsible for the country. And I'm not pitting the country against the city. What I'm saying is, very simply, the more you buy into society that man is creating, the more difficult it will be to experience God himself. The less you buy into society, or the more you detach yourself from the things of this world, the easier it will be to find things the way they were originally created to be, where man and God walk together and talk together, just like the garden.
Well, I always like to stress to people that there's more to the book of Genesis and Revelations than what meets the eye. I think one of the biggest, I don't know what you want to call it, overlooked or misunderstood or...
Right.
Or mistaken things about that book is Genesis and Revelations.
Mm-hmm.
The real messages are they're not secret. You don't need like a recipe or a treasure map.
Mm-hmm.
You just have to just really see it for what it is. The reality that I'm going to say everyone, because this is an internet radio show. So if you have internet access, you're probably not living in a refrigerator box under a railroad bridge.
Right.
So everybody that's listening to this show, our reality is not the reality of Christ. The life we lead, the life we have led, are through the generations is askew. It's wrong.
Right.
People, if you look at Adam and Eve, They had no thought of their bodies. There was no requirement for hiking boots, backpacks, and canteens and compasses in the Garden of Eden when they were walking with Christ.
Right.
There's no mention of them being hungry or cold or wet or tired or hot or injured or sick. It just talks about the wonderful relationship they shared. The punishment that was bestowed upon Adam and Eve, the punishment that was bestowed on the serpent to become a snake, to have its wheels taken away, is in reality a game changer. It's a change
right.
in your reality.
Right.
A change of your perspective. What you think is real, what you think is important, the way your life is, that was the punishment.
Right.
That's very telling. Because the punishment was painful childbirth, work, sweat, clothes, ego, anger, fear, hunger. Wake up every day to work and, you know, ashes to ashes, dust to dust, just
right.
a real...
Right.
Just a big mess of things.
Mm-hmm.
Well, since the first two people's reality was changed, and their punishment was the creation of a new reality with dramas and pain and suffering, was like a domino effect that's just tipped over dominoes for 2,000 years.
Right, right.
If you look at... if you look at when Jesus was walking around and you look at certain stories in the Bible, they all have one thing in common. Their realities were different than the people they were to come in contact with. Moses left his family. The guys that followed Jesus around, his posse, his gang, what did they do? They dropped their fishing nets. They dropped their tools. They walked away from their families. What was the point? The point is that the reality of God, the reality of a Christian, is different than the world. And then you add in these simple scriptures. There's nothing good of the flesh. There's nothing good of the world. Well, how could there be something good of the flesh? How could there be something good of the world if you look at the book of Genesis
right.
and you compare it to the punishments of Adam and Eve?
Right. Right.
It's literally 1 + 1 equals a really bad deal.
Yeah. Yeah. And that it just began to perpetuate, because if you look at what happened in the punishment, it's in Genesis 3. But if you look at the course correction, or the first course correction, it's in Genesis 6, three chapters. And God already had to, exalt a guy by the name of Noah, who was the most righteous of the day, and save his family, and two of every animal, and then wipe everything out. I mean, that just shows you how quickly man became evil. And the word says, the Bible says, that man was evil in his heart continually. So in other words, he didn't take a break. He so bit into this that this was his world and evil was his way of thinking.
Well, look what he did to his own son. His son had a reality of comfort, you know, just traveling around, talking
right.
to people, you know, on a lifelong camping and hiking trip with a bunch of buddies, and they were doing good. But what did he do? It wasn't enough. People weren't taking note of it. They weren't respecting it. They didn't understand the message. So what did he do? He altered the reality of his son. He made it really bad for a few days.
Right.
Then he sent him to hell, like, here's a cherry on top. I'm going to send you to hell, son, for 72 hours sleepover with my buddy Satan. And then what happens after that?
Yeah.
It gets better.
Yeah.
And look at Revelations, the altering of reality once again,
mm-hmm.
to show how bad it is and why it's bad before it gets better.
Well, the hardest thing, if you look through even Jesus' ministry, we've said this before, but, you know, on an overall scale, he's done better than anyone else. But still, the overall effect was not as far-reaching as you might think.
No, I get people really riled up when I say this. I say Jesus really wasn't effective. You know, I says he didn't know. You know, I purposely
well,
say
you're baiting them that way.
Yeah, I say Jesus wasn't very effective. Jesus really didn't do a good job, and they go what? And I say, and then I say, well, think about it. Jesus only was a lightning rod, a conduit. He was an extension cord from grace to the ground. That was the job of Jesus. He was nothing but a grace extension cord.
I kind of like that.
And I said, and he only benefited people who had an open heart and an open mind.
Right.
I mean, he walked by, he slept by, he ate with, he talked to people that were all screwed up, that had all kinds of things wrong. Entire towns were just one banana peel from a giant disaster. And he just passed them on by because they did not have the ability to set aside an incorrect frame of mind.
Right, right.
A complete, dynamic, wrong way of looking at what was real. Because the ones who did get it, got it. And there's examples of this, like the guy who was blind, and he says, well, I can't see. How am I supposed to go home? And Jesus says, you know what? Just shut up and go already, all right? You're fine. And once the guy believed that he was fine,
sure,
he was fine.
Yeah.
Well, Jesus didn't put a little sugar on top and say, pretty please, you know, let's just do it right this time. Change his eyes from brown to blue. No, he literally, in no uncertain terms, told the guy, go. Skedaddle. Get out of here. And this is lost.
Yeah, yeah, very much lost. In fact, while I'm listening to you, I'm thinking about how difficult it was for people to make take a different direction, or we've used the word for different direction, meaning repent. It was so difficult for people to do this because the overwhelming majority of people learned or bought into what society was all about as a result of the religion and tradition of the day. So when you consider the Pharisees, the scribes, the Sadducees, the rulers of the synagogue, those that were in charge religiously, whatever they considered to be what was accurate or what was reality became really the people's reality. They, if you will, controlled that. And even today, if you think about it, there's so much of what we call the church world, which is more the world of religion and tradition that controls people's reality. And that's why we have so many conflicting statements where people, you know, let's just use this as an example. You know, I really don't care if someone goes to a doctor or not. That's your choice. If you need to, go. But here's an interesting conflict of statements. Well, I'm going to the doctor, and the doctor's taken this out, and the doctor took that out, and it was a real successful surgery. Just really so thankful that God healed me. Well, if you look at it accurately, you know, to whatever degree God was helping, that's fine. But the truth of the matter is, it was your surgery. There's a conflict of interest there. How much better would it be to say, this is what was said of me, this is what took place, and this is what God did, because I realized I can't be of the flesh if I'm a spirit being. And, you know, it's a very interesting day we're living in, and I remember a statement that Smith Wigglesworth made, a man of faith, way back in, well, probably around 1920, 1930, and he was from England. And he made a statement that said, I foresee the day coming where it will be next to impossible to get people healed of divine method because of the rise of medical science.
Well, we got to do some housekeeping here. But first I want to say, look at the statement that says, you will do greater works than me.
Right.
You know, part of that statement, people don't know what that means. Does that mean that I'm going to part the Pacific Ocean? I'm going to, you know, have locusts sweep down on people that are mean. They look at it incorrectly. When that statement's made, you will do greater works than me, the work is being able to turn towards Christ. The work is going to be the effort that a person has to turn their back on the world.
Yeah.
And then you add in the phrase turn the other cheek. turn the other cheek doesn't mean let somebody punch you around. Somebody punches you, punch them back. Defend yourself. But the point is turn the other cheek means if the way you're looking and if the way you're hearing and the potential of what you're looking at and the potential of what you can hear is going to give negative thoughts in your mind to participate,
right,
you should turn your head the other direction.
Right.
And also, turn the other cheek also means that you need to turn away from the world, turn away from the reality that you know, and turn towards God.
Yeah, that's good.
We've got a text message, our first one of the night. It says, "Hi, Ranger, Jim, and BJ. Listening live, first time after listening to all the archives." All the archives.
Hmm.
That's what it says. "You guys are great. This is Stephen in Levelland, Texas. My friend C." That's all it says, "My friend C." Folks, if you want to text the show,
thanks for the text,
like Stephen did, it's very easy. The way he texts the show, the first word of your text is the word grace. Just type grace as the first word in your text message and then send it to this 5-digit number, 69302. Remember, first word that you type is text, then your comment or question. And then you send it, when it says the number, you just send it to this number. There's no one, there's no area code. It's just five numbers, 69302. If you want to email Jim and I in the barn, it's the name of Jim's show, The Abiding Presence. There's no spaces, no capital letters. Just type out The Abiding Presence at Gmail. G as in grace, or G as in grandma's gravy. gmail.com. If you have trouble texting or emailing and you didn't hear this information, on the Abiding Presence website, the contacts page has all this contact information. Just got another text. It says, "Nick in North Carolina, tuning in from the feed mill. Last chance, Jim, come to North Carolina early and I'll treat you to lunch."
Okay, I'm trying to think. I get in Friday. I've already got my plane reservations, Nick. So I get in Friday probably noon or 1 o'clock, and I'm sure I'm going to be picked up by the pastor. So we maybe can try to work something out. So let's stay in touch.
It says, "Any testimonies if grace this week?" Must be of grace. It says, "Any testimonies of grace this week?" Question mark, guys. Yeah, had one in the barn a little while ago, didn't we?
We did.
Let's see. Let's see if we've got any emails here. Nope, don't have any emails yet. And we like emails. We like texts. We literally can't get enough of them. What are you doing over there? What is that? What is that machine?
Well, it's another. I got some scriptures on it, so I have a good scripture.
What
for
was
what
that picture
about
that you keep blowing away?
Oh well, that's just a screensaver of Aaron and I.
Let me see it. Aaron's his wife. She works at a pawn shop in Tulsa or Broken Arrow. How old is that photograph?
Just this fall.
Huh. It's a nice picture.
Yeah, thanks.
And, oh, with her friend Penny?
I'm sure they're listening tomorrow.
Are you?
They
think
are.
They were?
Oh, yeah. They listen on Wednesdays when she goes to work.
Well, folks, if you happen to stop into a pawn shop somewhere in the Tulsa, Oklahoma area, you might see Aaron and Penny behind the counter. They'll be glad to, pawn your jewelry or sell you a firearm. And
it's actually a jewelry shop where they make jewelry.
Well, yeah. But
it's called the Vintage Pearl.
Well, you know, every pawn shop needs a name. It says, "This is Stephen again. My friend Carol is listening for the first time from Lubbock, Texas." Oh, that's what he was trying to say. So, Stephen's got a friend named Carol, and she's in Lubbock, Texas. And it says, "We met Jim at Dream Center."
Okay. Well, Carol, just so you know, I'm going to be coming back down to Lubbock, Texas. I think it's the 2nd through the 4th. And on the 4th, I'm going to be ministering at Pastor Bracken Christian's church.
4th of what?
4th of May. Thanks. 4th of May this year, and then Saturday night, maybe I can work out getting together with some of those same folks that I was at last time. So I'm working on that meeting, so maybe we'll get a chance to see you here in a couple of months.
Yeah, because this is February.
Yeah.
So March, April, May.
May.
Yeah. 90 days away.
Yeah, not too bad.
Nope.
Let me get the scripture that was going along the same lines of what
yeah.
you said.
Please.
It's over in 2 Corinthians 3:16 through 18 in the Message. It says, "Whenever, though, they turn to face God as Moses did, God removes the veil, and there they are, face to face. Then suddenly recognize, they suddenly recognize that God is a living, personal presence, not a piece of chiseled stone. And when God is personally present, a living spirit, that old constricting legislation is recognized as obsolete. All the law and the things you got to do. We're free of it. All of us. Nothing between us and God. Our faces shining with the brightness of his face." I like the part that says, "And when they turned to face God as Moses did, that's when the veil was removed and they saw God face to face."
Yeah. There's an identity. We've talked about identity now for what? A couple of shows?
Well, yeah, at least probably three, but here's my opinion about it. I don't think we can talk enough about it because
I
this
know.
Is the hang up right here.
Yeah, I know. You got a real bug in your bonnet about identity. I've noticed that.
Yeah. Well, you know what? I'm out
well,
there
see,
like on Wednesday nights doing the meetings, and this is what's really, you know, it's what's
yeah.
really helping the people.
Well, last Wednesday night, I was hunting coyotes and possums and skunks.
Did you get any?
I got a possum. Didn't get a possum on the ranch, but I saw it scurrying across the road. And so me and Ranger fired up the four-wheeler, and we drove around and got out on the road, and we got it about a quarter mile down the road. It was in the ditch.
Hmm.
About 30 yards from some horses, so that was a good save.
Okay.
Yeah, and I actually used it for a topic on the radio show, the disease that possums carry that is contracted by horses.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Hmm.
Well, you know me, I don't, like, hunt deer. Well, actually, you know, I've showed you the deer plots on the ranch, haven't I?
Well, yeah, and how about that big buck I saw?
Yeah, right outside my door.
Yep.
Right outside my front of my house.
Yeah, like what, maybe a month and a half earlier, he ran in front of my car
yeah.
on the street.
What a little scamp he is, huh?
Well, he's not little.
Well, see, here on the ranch,
he's good size.
I keep all the
nice
fertilizers rat. And herbicides away from the ponds and the creeks.
Mm-hmm.
Outside fences, inside fences, and the horse trails all have what I call nature buffers, 15 to 20 feet on either side of fences before, you know, we get to harvest ground, crop ground. And then we plant.
What are those for? Describing
well,
a buffer.
The I don't know what they're called. I mean, I'm sure they got some big fancy name. But what I do is on every side of a fence, I leave 15 to 20 feet. The only thing we do is spray it for weeds to keep the weeds out of the hay crop.
Okay.
But like if a tree wants to grow or, well, poison ivy, we get rid of poison ivy. But if anything wants to grow that is not going to affect the hay, we let it grow. We don't even prune them. It's just literally unbroken virgin ground as far as we're concerned.
Mm-hmm.
And this provides habitat for mice, rats, squirrels, you know, bunnies, whatever. It's so that we're not just totally raping the ground.
Okay.
And then we also, we never spray weeds or fertilizer when we know rain's coming so it won't wash into the ponds or the creeks. And then every fall, I disc up several acres. This year I dissed up about 5 acres in different locations and plant some kind of special deer food that through the winter it grows different plants that deer like in the winter.
Hmm.
We have a big deer herd.
Hmm. That's nice.
We got bobcat. We have everything but wild pigs and beavers and turkeys.
Hmm.
But we got everything else. No bears.
I'm surprised you don't have turkeys.
They're not really in our little area. And the only reason I don't have beavers is that I do not have any full-time running creeks that come into the ranch. If we had full-time running creeks, we would, because just a mile and a half away, they got beavers.
Hmm.
But most people don't like them because they flood things out, but I don't care. Hmm. I got a boat. We got a text here. It says, "It's Carol's birthday in Lubbock, Texas." This is from Steven. He says it's
Happy
Carol.
Birthday.
It says it's Carol's birthday today, and she looks much younger than how old she really is. No, it didn't. Steve's having a heart attack right now. Yeah. Poor Steve's breathing into a paper sack, and Carol is calling him saying, shut up.
That's pretty good.
But see, the thing is if you think about identity and you look at reality, remember I said the one thing that people don't like to admit is somebody is wrong, Jim. Somebody's wrong. Either people have been worshiping in the wrong place, and they've been worshiping and believing incorrectly, or God is weak and God makes mistakes, and God isn't as powerful as what people are led to believe. The right. Bible is mistaken. It's fiction. It's just pretty words.
Mm-hmm.
Because somebody has to be looking at this from the wrong point of view.
Right, right.
Their perspective isn't right. Their point of view is incorrect. Their what they believe to be real is not real. And the interesting thing is that as man has evolved and technology has evolved and people have gotten smarter, they've become dumber as far as grace is concerned.
Yeah, yeah. Spiritually illiterate.
Because there's nothing good of the flesh, there's nothing good of the world. So the more mm-hmm. that someone is connected to the flesh, the more that someone is connected to this world, the more distractions they have, which means they're living in a reality that is created by man, and it's a reality that is not created by Christ. And that's the punishment of Adam and Eve. He said, fine, you want to have apple cider and apple pie and apple turnovers and apple butter, so be it. You can have all the apples you want, but I am going to punish you and change your reality.
Well, they got what they actually wanted. Instead of keeping it the way that it was with God, their decision brought that on them. So it wasn't in a sense that God made that become their reality as much as their own choice made it become a reality. He gave them exactly what they wanted. He put them in charge over the earth. So their decisions here actually brought upon their demise. And the interesting thing, and that is, just look at the way today everybody works so hard, and notice the word works. Works so hard with such effort to try to produce the things that we call necessary for life. And yet this was all grace and God's responsibility in the garden. And when you look at the life of Jesus, I think this is very interesting because he comes on the scene and shows us what it looked like before Adam and Eve sinned. His relationship to the Father wasn't about the things at all. It was just about hanging out and enjoying the presence of his Father, sharing that good news and that testimony with other people, and letting people experience the overflow, so to speak, of Jesus' experience with his dad. And people rejected it so much so that they actually put him on a cross. It became that offensive to him that he, being a man, would make himself God. In other words, they twisted everything that Jesus did, and instead of embracing that this is how God wants us to experience him, they twisted it to make it that Jesus was trying to elevate himself to a position that wasn't his, which shows you that man lost his way. He didn't recognize or have a clue what humanity was supposed to be. So instead of being a spirit being in connection with God, man subjected himself to being a human being in connection with the world. Where connected to the world, your life is all about how many things you can accomplish so that you can have those things not only sustain your life, but give your life meaning. And we lost our point of reference that God actually is our meaning. Very sad, but I love what we shared here about Genesis, because people have got to see this. When Adam came out of being in the garden, all of a sudden his identity is on food, it's on clothing, it's on work, it's on produce, it's on performance. You know, Eve's her reality is all about you know, the chores that are necessary to be done, the cooking of the food, you know, the working with clothes, whatever the things that they both did in interaction with each other, whatever chores they did, it's all about the necessities of this life, something that man never had to actually put his affection or his attention on. And it's very telling that today, where we're at, to actually have somebody enjoy Jesus in the midst of their day is a very foreign concept. Really, really is. Kind of sad. What do you got over there?
I'm tearing the snot out of the Jim Huckaday Facebook page.
Oh, really?
Yeah, because there's activity on your Facebook page, and yeah. This is what I just posted. If you are reading this post on Tuesday evening, 2/11/14, why are you reading this on Facebook instead of listening to Jim's radio show? You're on the internet anyways.
That's good.
See, that's me. I'm always winning. I'm always making friends, Jim.
Yeah.
I'm always...
At my expense.
Well, I mean, if somebody is going to...
No, I like it. Why not, right? If they're on the internet anyhow, why not tune in and listen?
Well, yeah. I mean, to me, I think that's a valid question.
Right.
I mean, they're not shopping for socks and underwear. They're on a pasteurizing Facebook page.
Right.
If they think it's great and they want to read that stuff, why don't they commit to listen to the show? I think it's about accountability.
Yeah, very, very good.
Okay, let's see if we've got any emails, if we got any emails yet. We don't have any emails. You know what? I don't even think we have anybody listening. Do we have anybody listening? We know it's Carol's birthday in Lubbock, Texas. Steve said she's listening. So we got Steve, Carol, and Nick. So we've got three people.
All right.
Four, if you count my dog. Is she awake or is she sleeping?
No, she's awake.
Oh, well, then we got four listeners.
Yep, good.
That's better than none.
That's all we need.
Do you listen?
I'm doing my best.
Well, that's five.
Yeah.
I don't know. Sometimes I pay attention.
Yeah.
Now, this identity and this reality that people... You know, I talked about how difficult that has to be for someone to sink a lot of time, sink a lot of money, of generation after generation, as a society, as a civilization, the way you're supposed to worship God, it's supposed to be at a certain place, certain events are supposed to occur in a certain order, on a certain day, a certain time. There's so many rules and so many parameters that it's a very real reality to many people.
Yeah.
You know, remember the example I gave you before the show started about dogs? I said it would be 10, maybe 100 to 1,000 times harder for me not to live with a dog than it would for your family.
Right.
I mean, Ranger, I mean, we eat our meals together, we work together, we play together, we sleep together. She's sitting right here by my side. I'm petting her right now. I can't imagine not having a close, personal, 24/7 relationship with a dog. She goes in the grocery store. She goes in the bank. She goes into anywhere I go, Ranger goes. And frankly, she's more welcome than...
Sure.
She has a lot more friends than I do.
Sure.
Ranger's always welcome. They ask me if I'm tracking mud in. They never ask Ranger if she's tracking mud in.
Right.
But I mean, you know, I mean, you love your dogs and you take care of them. They're part of your family, but it's not the same.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's like that with people. The more they live their lives a quote-unquote Christian way...
Right.
The more they pray, the more they worship, the more songs they sing, the more buildings and structures they go to, it's going to be tougher for some to sit down and say, this isn't working, this has to be wrong.
Right, right.
You know, there's old sayings, you can't fix it till you know it's broke.
Right.
And how do you know that it's the right direction unless you try another direction? I mean, there's all kinds of cute little metaphors and sayings, but they all end up the one thing, change.
Yeah, well, what's really interesting, this is my opinion, though, but it's really interesting. In fact, I look forward to seeing what you say about this, but, you know, people are looking at failure, but don't even acknowledge that it is failure. In other words, it's as though we've learned how to fail so successfully that we kind of smooth it over so we don't even have to admit the failure. So right in the midst of, in fact, I was listening to a guy or read an article by a guy today that was talking about, you know, that I'll always go to church, and I'm not trying to tell somebody not to go somewhere or to go, but I'm just saying this is what he was saying. I'll always go to church. And he was speaking against somebody that was saying, you know, that I'm not getting anything at the church where I'm going. So I stopped going. Well, that's not really what I'm trying to make the discussion about. It's the article. That even though in the midst of the article, he admitted to the fact that things weren't going really well, but he's going to open up another church. And then things weren't really going very well with that one, but he's going to open up even another church. And I would just always go. Well, I'm thinking to myself, you're not even seeing within your own argument that your own argument admits to failure. So why not fix the failure first, then go ahead and make another duplicate of the failure?
Well, look at some...
And he had, excuse me, he had that talked about the day in society that we're in, and his books were based on the churches today that we would probably call buildings, that it's not good to have one. You need to multiply many in the city. But the one that he's even talking about didn't have success.
I find it very telling that there are people who are quote unquote living a Christian life and existence. They worry about the words they use. They worry about the clothes they wear. They worry about their outward appearance, about what people will think. They have a certain modesty, a certain air of conservancy, being conservative, mm-hmm. And respectful.
Right.
And they spend a lot of time reading the book, and they spend a lot of time worshiping somewhere.
Mm-hmm. Praise music and so on and so forth.
But yet, they don't have any trouble making doctor's appointments.
Mm-hmm.
They don't have any problem when they go to town shopping to pick up some Aleve or Tylenol or aspirin, some Band-Aids, some three-way antibiotic cream. They don't seem to have a problem with that. They don't seem to have a problem with getting flu shots, buying more vitamins and drinking more orange juice because it's cold and flu season. And they don't seem to have a problem with contact lenses or getting whatever that surgery is called, so you don't have to wear glasses at all.
Mm-hmm.
Which I find really, really weird, because from what I understand from that eye surgery, it messes with your night vision. A lot of people that have had that surgery so you don't wear glasses, they say they have a hard time driving at night.
Well, that can happen too, if just as you get older, if that's...
No, it's the surgery.
Hmm.
Yeah, I know like three people have had it, and I says, what's your night vision like? And he says, well, you know, it's just a little different driving at night. And I go, oh, that's good. And he says, I'm so blessed because I got it.
Hmm.
Yeah, you're... Okay, great. Thanks for sharing. But there's a systematic breakdown in just basic common sense.
Right.
Because the same person I'm describing will not tolerate unsafe food served to them in a restaurant. The same exact person will not stand for someone stealing from them. The same exact person has zero tolerance for someone using words or language or saying things that they find offensive or that they would disagree with. They have definite boundaries as what is acceptable,
right,
and what is good and what is bad. But yet, for some reason, they have no recognition system. They have no cognizant ability to say, Well, I'm doing all these things and nothing is coming of it. I'm working, I'm planting seeds, I'm watering it, but the plants are growing, but there's nothing to eat. There's no end result.
Right.
There's no productivity for their worship or their lifestyle.
Yeah, but having been in...
It's a wrong reality.
Yeah, it is. And it's a cat chasing its own tail. You never get there. And having lived in that type of an environment for years and years and years, we never thought twice. I never thought twice about having an eye surgery, LASIK surgery for my eyes. So 8 years ago, I had that surgery for my eyes.
Does it mess with your driving at night?
No.
I notice you don't back up very well when you leave at
night. Oh, get out of town. I back up just fine. You're so wrong.
I don't know about anybody else, folks, but I...
You enjoyed that. I realize that. I'm glad I could make you laugh.
Well, that's all right. You got hundreds of acres to put that little car in reverse.
Yeah, right. But, no, these are things we just never even thought about. You just, again, it just goes back to... You repeat and repeat. You just kind of made a duplicate of everything that you've been hung around with and people that you're with. And, you know, when you go back to talking about, you know, how, in a sense, hypocritical it is because, yes, on one hand, you buy into all the things of the world that way. Excuse me. On the other hand, yes, you feel almost like you're superior to people because, you know, your language is good. Your manners are good. The way you dress is nice. You hold yourself, you know, in public nice. You're polite. All these things, which I'm not against being polite. I'm not against, you know, dressing nice. I'm not against, you know, having good manners by no means. But I'm saying we substituted what real Christianity is for a really terrible form of it. An outward show of feeling like we had some sense of godliness, but we had no power. And Paul talked to Timothy and said exactly that. He said, turn away from people that have a form of godliness, but deny the power. He said, from such, turn away. In other words, these people are like a cancer. They'll pull you into their life of no productivity, yet everything about their life says, I'm religious. Yeah. I'm holy. I have a one-up on you.
I always feel bad for those kind of people because... I know how hard they work, and I know how careful they are, because I know how I don't work, and I know how I don't care at all, and how grace is everywhere.
Well, it's misguided energy.
Yeah, but at the same time, I can't draw a picture for them.
Mm-hmm.
I could talk from now until Christmas, and it wouldn't work. Because someone has to literally choose to say, wait a minute, I might want to try walking in this direction. I may want to think differently. You can't force somebody to do that.
Yeah.
Not even with a gun to their head or with a cattle prod. It's something that somebody has to choose.
Right. You know, Paul made the statement about how he was a Pharisee of Pharisees. He was like one of the top dogs of the religious people. And he had that occurrence on the road to Damascus where Jesus appeared to him. And Paul saw reality, what was real and what wasn't real. And as a result of that, everything changed in Paul's life. And he said, literally, I've laid everything aside to run after Jesus. Now, I can say as well with me, I mean, I wasn't a Pharisee of Pharisees, but boy, I was probably pretty close for years and years and years. But the thing that changed me was work with the sick in prayer and healing school. That's really where things began to change. Because when I went from just having a gleeful time traveling on the road with Brother Hagin, singing in the singing group, and we were ministering and doing all kinds of wonderful things, and it was great. And a lot of people were blessed. But when I went from that atmosphere to the atmosphere of doing a prayer school and a healing school on a daily basis, all of a sudden now the responsibility was overwhelming, not just how many messages can I preach, but what can I produce in front of these people?
Yeah.
And for the first 3 months, the lack of production, seeing people die left and right, hit me straight between the eyes. And that's where I had one of those rock bottom moments. And I said, I'm done.
Well, look at...
But that's where grace rescued me.
Most people that find God and grace is right in front of their face are people whose reality is gone. Either it's taken away by a judge and jury and they're on death row, or their boat has sank and they're adrift in a life raft out in the middle of the ocean for months. They're in a house fire. They're in a hospital bed and somebody's just told them that they'll be deader than a can of corned beef in a month. Their world and the reality that they've lived has no meaning anymore.
Hmm.
They're not participating in it.
Right.
I mean, I spent 7 months in a hospital bed. That's a long time. And I'm here to tell you, after about 5 weeks, the train of life had passed me by.
Mm-hmm.
People stopped coming to visit. Wasn't as many calls. If I called them, the calls were shorter. And finally, I just said, oh, never mind. And after that seven-month period, and then a couple of years of being in a wheelchair, nothing was the same. Mm-hmm. Some people had died. Some people had gotten a divorce. Some people had gotten married. Some businesses closed down. So, I mean, it was a very humbling learning lesson that my little part of the world means nothing.
Right.
That whether I'm alive or dead or wheelchair or hospital bed means nothing to the world, because the world keeps turning and things keep going. And that is the lesson that people learn in a house on fire.
Sure.
Or
sure.
Out at sea.
Yeah, I had that lesson too.
I know. And if people acknowledge that that's true, then maybe that is the leg up that will help them to realize they need to just sit down, shut up, take a big swallow, and say, maybe I am looking at my life and the identity I have,
right,
and the reality that I think is real, maybe it's time for a change.
Well, you know, when Adam, and in the garden, of course, he yielded to the suggestions, Eve yielded to the suggestions about taking the bite of the apple, and then Eve gave to Adam, and Adam ate willfully. Well, we know all that. Well, when you go back in Scripture and you see that God, in Genesis chapter 1, 26 and 27, he made man in his image and in his likeness, and he gave man dominion over all the works of his hands, over the fish of the sea, the birds of the air, the beasts of the field. And man had authority on the earth. In other words, just very simply, God wasn't planning on running this planet. He was just planning on enjoying hanging out with Adam, who was going to run it. And they would just co-labor together, so to speak. Well, when Adam sinned, or when he disobeyed one simple little command, suggestion that God made, it's very interesting that there was a real cataclysmic experience that took place after that, because everything shifted and the authority that was upon Adam became now the authority of Satan. And I have some scripture over here that proves that just shows in Luke in chapter 4. And this is when Jesus was being tempted in the wilderness by the devil. But I'm going somewhere with this, and it's all along the same lines. It says, verse 4, Jesus answered him and said, it is written that man shall not live by bread alone, but by every word of God. And the devil, taking him up into a high mountain, showed unto him all the kingdoms of the world in a moment of time. And the devil said unto him, all this power I will give you, and the glory of it, for this has been delivered or given to me, and to whosoever I will, I give it. Now think about that. What's the devil saying? I know he's a deceiver, but look at what he's saying. He's giving a valid temptation. He's twisting it, but notice what he's saying. He's saying, this power has been given to me, and I can give the authority of the kingdoms of the world to whomever I want to give it to. So we recognize that man is the reason why things have gone south. But the devil, with the authority over the kingdoms of the world, has certainly been a tremendous influence to man to make all kinds of heinous decisions that have caused this world in the way that the world is, meaning that people think the way that the world is, that this is life. And it's 180 degrees totally against and away from experiencing God, because there's nothing about the influence of Satan that wants you to experience God. Satan doesn't have any problem. The devil, enemy, slewfoot, whatever you want to call him, doesn't have any problem. You go into a place that you think is church, where really, even though you get nice songs, you have nice people there, you have nice things spoken there, no one's going anywhere. He loves that. Yeah. He'll even help you to do that. My point is to say, if things are this wrong upon the planet, and you can see that only few seem to get prayers answered, this is what should wake us up as a dinner bell to say, okay, something is really wrong, and it could be wrong with me.
That's pretty good.
Well, it's just some thoughts.
We got a text here. We got two. It says, Jim, BJ, and Ranger, great show. Listening in Broken Arrow.
Okay.
Who do you think that is?
Maybe Todd and Cheryl.
I don't know. There's a couple people we have in Broken Arrow.
Uh-huh.
Is Todd and Cheryl the people that have the movie theater?
Yeah.
I really ought to go to their movie theater.
Well, it's going to be open someday. I mean, they had a couple snags they ran into where
they're not showing movies?
Well, the guy that sold it to them never told them the air conditioner wasn't working like it should, and that there was a hole in the roof. And so there were some undisclosed things that needed to be disclosed. So as far as them getting the, what is it, some type of
permits?
Permits. Yeah. They're still working on some of that. But they'll get there.
Hmm. Well, now I want to go because there won't be people there.
Oh, yeah. There you go.
Yeah.
Yeah. It might be a little cold in there, but we can go.
I have socks and underwear. Yeah. I work outside every day.
Hey, I do too. My socks are approved.
I wonder if we went there, if Ranger can't go in, I'm not going in. I wonder if they'd let me and Ranger just sit in there, and I wonder if we could have some popcorn, just sit in a seat and just, look at a dark screen for a little bit.
I bet they could. I'll ask them tomorrow.
It says, we got another text. This one's really long, and so part of it got cut off. I'm pretty sure it says, hello, Jim, BJ, and Ranger. Since the first time we listened to Jim Huckaday in Eau Claire, Wisconsin, and listened to the Abiding Presence on Tuesday nights, and that's where it stops. So whoever sent this...
Oh, Lord, we don't know what's next.
Well, no, because we don't know who it is. That's have no phone number. We can't call them back and say, what'd you say? So whoever sent this text that said Jim Huckaday in Eau Claire, Wisconsin, and listened to the Abiding Presence on Tuesday nights, let us know what you typed after we.
Well, whoever that is, too, make sure you tell Pastor Creamy and the Creamettes.
Hello.
Pastor Sherwood, that we said hello.
Oh, I got a response on your Facebook page. It said, after what I wrote?
Right.
It says, I'm posting while listening. Top that.
That's good. I like it.
Yeah, well,
I really like it.
Do you?
Yeah.
Well, what will you think? This is what I put. I go, easy to do. I'm typing while talking on the show you are listening to.
Oh.
And then I put enough said. I think
<That's good.
laughs> so mine's a little better now.
Yeah,
because they said, I'm typing, I'm posting while listening, top that.
Yeah.
And then I said, easy to do, I'm typing while talking on the show you're listening to.
Yeah, that's good.
Okay, we got emails.
Okay,
we've got one here. Hey, guess who it's from? It's from Sue in Livermore, California.
Good.
It says, hi, Ranger, Jim, and BJ, I'm here listening while eating my tacos.
Well, now she's going to give food descriptions every week, you can tell.
Yeah. But see, here's the thing. What kind of tacos? She's in California. I hope they aren't those ridiculous fish tacos.
You don't like fish tacos?
You eat fish tacos?
There are some great fish tacos. You got to go to the right place.
Really? Yeah. I'm in a hurry to get there. we got one here. It says, hello, two more listening in Morgan Hill. This is Sue's mom and dad.
Yep.
It says, two more listening in Morgan Hill. Hello, BJ, Jim, Ranger, and family. Grandpa and grandma. And, all right, we've got others here. We get to, it says, listening here in Pennsylvania, but you keep mixing me up living in New York. Although I am very near New York border and had to temporarily relocate near your old stomping ground in Buffalo.
Oh.
Were you in Buffalo?
Well, north of Buffalo, Niagara Falls.
You live
Lewiston.
There?
Well, that's where I lived for half my life.
Seriously?
Yeah.
I didn't know that. They have snow up there.
A lot.
It says, Jim, but now back here in Pennsylvania, wishing you could come back to the Elmira area, which is where we first heard you a year ago. Elmira is 12 miles from us. Anyway, just wanted you to know others
are
listening.
Tell them I'll be in Schenectady.
Yeah? Well, you tell them.
I'll be in Schenectady, New York, the last part of April. Just look on our website.
Okay. Why would you tell me to tell them when you're talking into a microphone?
Well, it doesn't make sense. But it's just because you're doing all the reading. I didn't want to interrupt you.
Look what you started.
What?
I've had the best fish tacos ever in Mexico.
There you go.
This is from Cheryl.
Yeah.
Well, maybe if fish tacos are that great, they should serve them at their movie theater.
Might be a little sloppy. Do you know that there are movie theaters where they serve you all kinds of food and you get these chairs that have lounges on them and everything? I mean, they're incredible.
Really?
Yeah, you would love it.
Hey, Jim, do you know what time it is?
I do.
What time is it?
It's 9:01.
I'm sorry, I stopped caring at 9 o'clock.
Oh, you did?
That was kind of mean, wasn't it?
Well, I don't care.
I don't care about fish tacos.
But I don't care either.
What about my life? What about the world I live in? It could even be associated with something as ridiculous as a fish in a taco.
Well, you cared enough to hope that it wasn't a fish taco. So I just cared enough to say that they're good. Touché.
Okay. Touché. All right, we got one here. It says, Hi, Ranger, BJ Jim. Shout out to Nick and Tim here in North Carolina. Great show tonight. We really love how it ties so well and the previous weeks. Just wrapping up the second time through Healing by Design. What's Healing by Design?
That's some of the...
It says, have to say it has been a great trip through this second time and reading. Oh, this is one of your books, Jim's book as well. Or what?
Yeah, it's some of my material. I think it's the same show material that you got for those 9 weeks. We call it Healing by Design.
Oh, it says Jim hit on something a little while ago that I know a lot of people would love to hear more about. You use the word detoxing from years of incorrect teaching. I know that it can happen in an instant, but even Jesus progressed in wisdom. Love to hear some thoughts on how we can accelerate our detox and repent from what we previously understood to the truth. Well, there you go. Ready, set, go.
Yeah, well,
elaborate on what you were talking about.
Well, here's how I see it. And this is something that I'm working on because, again, it goes back to the patterns of how you do life. And, you know, some of the patterns of how I've done life has always been to try to be very accommodating to people. Some of that could be possible insecurities. I don't know. I don't feel like I'm an insecure person by any means. But I've always endeavored to be very accommodating to people, try to please people. Well, now think about that. That's just really a setup for what? Compromise. Oh, well, okay, well, we don't have to do that. We can just do this. And if you get into a certain pattern of life, it translates into the way that you do Scripture and the way that you do God. One moment you're going to go ahead and trust the Lord. The next moment you're back into trusting medical science or back into trusting the hand of man. And I remember, you know, especially when I was very sick for the first time, when I actually saw God touch my body. This was back about 8-9 years ago. It was when I got so fed up with going back and forth that I said to the Lord, I'm done now. You know, I'm not even going to talk to you anymore about this. It's just done. It's over. And I'm done even fussing with it. So good night. And just went to bed. And I found within the course of that next week, things just amazingly began to change in my physical body. Well, again, that's getting to the end of your rope. And usually at the end of your rope, you're gonna let go of all those little things and those little innuendos of your life that are all the hindrances. So I'm getting back to detoxing, which is, it's going to be different for everybody. But it always comes down to how all in are you? And if you're not all in, then you still have to detox from the mentalities of the world and the way you're associated with them. And for me, I'm all in some areas, and other areas I'm becoming all in. And it's exciting for me, but at the same time, what did I share with you tonight, BJ? I've came in, and I wasn't sad. Part of me was a little mad almost. I said, the more I get to see this, the more I realize how true it is, the more this pins my hide to the wall, and I end up either feeling like I'm a champ or I'm just a schmuck, is what I said. I just feel because you see so much more accurately where you're all in and where you're not, where you're on and where you're off.
And one of the greatest benefits of having a relationship with the guys and enjoying grace in your life is the ability of grace to shield you from the most ridiculous waste of time.
Yeah.
That 100% of the people that you know, work with, and are related to are going through.
Swamped.
They're drowning.
They're drowning
in stuff.
Yeah.
That doesn't have no bearing on anything. But here's the thing that makes it really sad. You know that they're wasting their time. You know they're drowning in it. There's nothing you can do about it. Because you're talking about the difference between the reality of Christ and the reality of the world.
Well, I've got a thought here, and just comment on this. There's nothing you can do about it because it goes down to the central issue of how much do you desire to change.
Well,
because when you really desire to change, I believe God's grace will help you to see it.
Well, it also goes to the point where it's an individual's choice.
Well, it is, but the choice I'm saying,
there's that accountability, responsibility.
Yeah, but I have such a desire to change that I'm seeing other people, they can take it or leave it.
And see, this is where the real testimony of grace comes in, is the only thing that you can do is be an example.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You can't beat somebody over the head with a book. You
right.
can't make deals. Well, I'll do this if you just go to Sunday service with me. I hate that kind of deals. You know, that's just manipulation and leverage. That's not going to get anybody anywhere.
Mm-hmm.
The best thing that you can do is live your life, enjoy your life, revel in the wonderful relationship with the guys, spot as much grace as you can, and enjoy it. Because then, sooner or later, they're going to say, what has changed about you?
Right.
Why are you so lucky, and why does my life just seem to be nothing but upheaval and chaos?
Remember when we were talking about this at the beginning, and I was sharing about, you know, how you just see how well you're doing, but at the other hand, you really see how bad you're doing at the same time. Remember what you said? You said, yeah, I know. That's why I ran so quickly to it.
Yeah, I couldn't get through it fast enough. I said, this is bad. I got to go where it's good. Because once I knew that God was real, once I knew grace was real, I could not turn my back fast enough.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's like one time I said something, and people just said I was crazy. You know, they says, well, why don't you come over and spend the afternoon with us? And I go, well, what are you going to do? And they says, oh, we're just going to have some beer and wine and maybe watch some movies, maybe shoot some cans off a fence post or something. And I said, well, let's see. I could watch you guys get drunk and see how bad of a shot you are, or I could sit home and do nothing but spend time with God. Well, what do you mean you're going to be with God? You're going to pray? I don't have to pray. Why would I pray? I'm with God right now.
Mm-hmm.
Well, what do you mean he's there? He's there. He's here. Well, what are you doing? Well, we're watching a movie about submarines in World War II with John Wayne. He says, So Jesus is watching a World War II submarine movie with John Wayne. And I go, yeah, right here, right now. It's great. Having the time of my life. And they said,
all the company I need.
And I says, why? Why would I want to, what would be better than spending time with God?
Now see,
And they just said, like, God, you are just so... They said, you know what? This is why you're going to burn in hell, BJ. You're going to get struck by lightning. And says, I'm going to look in the western sky and see a big smokestack. And I'll say, yep.
But this is proving totally the point of why we're doing this show, is to help the awareness. Of course, I'm learning the whole time I'm doing it, but to help raise the awareness. Now, this will get you. Raise the awareness for how real God is so that he can become real to you. And I said, this is going to get you, because what do we hear the statement about raising the awareness to what nowadays? What is everybody raising the awareness to? And they wear a certain color, and they're raising the awareness to, the color is pink that they wear, and we're raising the awareness to...
Well, every color is something different.
Yeah, well, pink represents breast cancer.
Yeah.
So we're raising the awareness.
Green is the environment.
Yeah. Everybody's wearing, even the football players wear pink helmets now and pink shoes.
They do?
Well, they will at certain times. This is Breast Cancer Awareness Week.
I didn't know that.
And so then the football players do that, or they'll have pink towels on or something. But my point is, they raise the awareness so people are so aware of it, they actually allow themselves to get it. And that's exactly what we're doing, but not in a negative way, but in a positive way, endeavoring to raise the awareness that you mean God could be that real to you, to hang out with him all day, to say something like, hey, Lord, guys, I'm going to go do such and such. Would you want to go do that with me? And you talk to God like that? Well, he's real to me, and I know he wants to be involved. Well, if we can raise that awareness so that people think, could he really be that real, then he can be that real. You know, I feel like I'm quoting something you've said, and yet I know that I've thought these kind of thoughts before. But, you know, one of the greatest hindrances to the awareness of God or to the realness of God is having a mind that can think beyond what you consider to be life and believe that there's so much more. If you're stuck with your world and your mind doesn't ever go beyond where your four walls are, so to speak, with your job. Well, this is as far as I can go in my job. So this is my top pay, and I just have to trust for, you know, a increase every year with the cost of living. And this is my budget, and this will always be my budget. And so this is where I'm at with all the... Well, if you can't think beyond that, how will you ever be opened to greater things? And if you can't think beyond what you call life to see it operating differently in a more grand style with God at the very center of it, how will God ever be at the very center?
Remember the last couple of shows I've said that there are people that maybe they're a machinist, or they work a lathe, or they work in a garment factory, or maybe they assemble cars, but they work it in an industrial environment. And the company is bought out or goes out of business, they're closed down. And they've spent 20, 30 years, and somebody would say, what do you do? And they'd say, I'm a machinist, I'm a welder. I put tires on new cars, I'm a painter. I sew coats, I'm an electrician, plumber. Their job becomes who they are. And when they're laid off, or they retire, or the business goes out of business, they've lost part of who they are. And they identified so much with their job and their career that they cannot literally cope with doing anything else to make money. Even if it's a job that pays more. And I've used it before. Maybe they were making $12 an hour as a carpenter. And somebody says, well, you can work with me. Yeah, but you're a garbage man. I make $22 an hour hauling garbage. You are making $12 as a carpenter. That's almost double. Well, I don't want to be a garbage man. I'm not a garbage man. That's what I do to make money. See, it shows how people identify with things in their life that really shouldn't be that important.
Well, give us the history lesson. What it used to be like?
Well, the history lesson is that it used to be... I mean, I remember when I was a kid, I would hear... I'd be working on their horses. You know, I'd be 8, 9, 10 right. year, years old. I'd be working on horses, and these women would be holding their horses, and they'd be gossiping. And they would ask, well, does he have a job? Because that was the big priority. It wasn't what he did for a job.
Yeah,
was the guy employed?
Right.
Does he have a job?
So having one was acceptable.
Yes. Nowadays,
yeah.
Well, what's his job? That's it? Is he going to be like, get his own stores? Is he going to be an assistant manager? There's no room, do you see?
Mm-hmm.
Nowadays, it's so material and it's so about entitlements that having a job and paying the bills just isn't good enough anymore.
Yeah, well, maybe that's...
Can't just be healthy. You can't have a nice smile, good personal hygiene. You just can't be physically healthy. You have to be sexy. You have to be appealing to the eye. You just can't be healthy. You can't just have a nice, comfortable life. You have to have a retirement fund. You have to have savings accounts.
Mm-hmm.
You have to. I know people that won't go out with somebody if they don't have a certain amount of good credit. That doesn't define a person. That just means that they're really good at shopping and they pay their bills.
Mm-hmm.
I know a lot of first-rate schmucks that are criminals that have amazing credit lines.
Right, right.
As time has gone on, the history of man have changed. The history, the topic of the show is this. In the time of Jesus, before that, in the time of John the Baptist, in the time of the Garden of Eden, I was going to say evil, in the Garden of Eden.
I saw that.
It was about the person and their thought process and what was in their heart. Because what's in your heart is what's in your mind.
Yeah, I've got a scripture that backs
that
up.
And part of the punishment of Adam and Eve was to what? To give them to put clothes on, to be ashamed and embarrassed of what God had created.
Right.
It must be covered with clothing. So, and look how that has been distorted into the 11th of February in 2014.
Right.
That you just can't wear clothes. They have to be what?
Designer clothes.
Designer clothes. They have to be in style.
Special.
It's winter time. You can't wear summer colors. Not only that, but your hat needs to match your boots. Your top has to match your purse.
Mm-hmm.
You have to be color coordinated. You just can't wear something because it's comfortable. Because look at that person. They've got on blue pants and a yellow shirt. That doesn't go together. That's what this world has been distorted to be reality.
Yeah, yeah.
Your clothes just can't be clean. You can't just paid for the clothes and worked hard for them. Those clothes have to be acceptable to the civilization and the society.
Yeah.
How messed up was that?
Yeah.
We got a boatload of emails, by the way.
Okay. Well, let me read this. I think this is good. We'll get those emails. I'm over in 1 Kings 4 and verse 5. It says, that night there in Gibeon, God appeared to Solomon in a dream. God said, what can I give you? Ask. And this is the Message Bible. Solomon said, you were extravagantly generous in love with David, my father, and he lived faithfully in your presence. His relationships were just and his heart right. And you have persisted in this great and generous love by giving him, and this very day, a son to sit on his throne. And now here I am, God, my God. You have made me your servant, ruler of the kingdom in place of David, my father. I'm too young for this, a mere child. I don't know the ropes, hardly know the ins and outs of this job. And here I am, set down in the middle of the people you've chosen, a great people, far too many to ever count. Here's what I want. Give me a God-listening heart so I can lead your people well, discerning the difference between good and evil, for who on their own is capable of leading your glorious people? Isn't this good? See what Solomon was asking for? A God-listening heart so I can lead your people well, discerning the difference between good and evil. And verse 10, God the Master was delighted with Solomon's response, and God said to him, "Because you have asked for this, and haven't grasped for long life or riches or the doom of your enemies, but you have asked for the ability to lead and govern well, I'll give you what you've asked for. I'm giving you a wise and mature heart. There's never been one like you before, and there'll never be one after. As a bonus, I'm giving you both the wealth and the glory you didn't ask for. There's not a king anywhere who will come up to your mark. And if you stay on course, keeping your eye on the life map and the God signs as your father David did, I'll also give you a long life." It's really good when you look at that in light of what we're talking about.
It does.
You just got through saying.
And this shows the history of it.
The history, right.
Yeah.
Was the heart.
Yeah. Well, it's kind of nice if we're, you know, it's kind of handy if we're on target.
Yeah. Yeah, it is, isn't it?
Well, it's kind of the point of things.
Yeah, it's better to be on target than not.
Speaking of the point of things, folks, if you want to text the show, there's more than enough time to send a text message. We love them. Just the first word that you type, the keyword in your text message needs to be the word grace. And then you send that to this five-digit number, 69302, the number that you send your text to. The email is the name of Jim's show, The Abiding Presence, at Gmail, the letter G as in Grandma's Gravy, gmail.com. Okay, this email came in 35 minutes ago. It says, "Just want you guys to know, I'm listening in Atlanta, have been listening and visiting the archives for quite a while now." And this is from Evelyn.
Good. Thanks, Evelyn.
Yep. Okay, we got another one here. We got one that says, "Hi, Jim, BJ and Ranger. Grace has been so good to my family this week. A job in the perfect location with the perfect hours was provided. Grateful for your radio program and the teaching. Looking forward to Jim's visit to Toronto." When are you going to be in Toronto?
The third weekend of this month. So not this weekend, but the next one. 22nd, I believe.
Yeah, Saturday's the 22nd, Sunday's the 23rd.
And then I'll be there Monday and Tuesday. That's when we're going to be doing a show, taped show.
This came in 26 minutes ago. It says, oh, here we go. It says, "Listening from Maple Grove, Minnesota. Like tonight's message, hello, Grandma and Grandpa in Morgan Hill, and hello to Sue." This is Dave and Barb, who are fitting the bill for the new radio equipment, which I want to get installed. I finally got all the parts. I got the lumber.
Good.
But my workers at the ranch haven't shown up, so I've been busy.
Okay.
Well, tonight I just got chores done when you rolled up.
Right.
We were still outside. And what happened when you rolled up tonight? What happened? What did one of the cowgirls do?
She had a flashlight and wanted to see what kind of socks I had on. So wrong.
She just did, didn't
just
she?
Just ridiculous, yeah.
A little wisp of a cowgirl, 100 pounds, soaking wet with rocks in her britches, came up and she actually took a flashlight and was shining them to see what kind of socks he had on. Okay, this came in 25 minutes ago. This is from Lacey. It says, "Hi, Ranger, Jim, and BJ. I have worn glasses and contacts since I was a kid. For over 25 years, I hate wearing them. I have thrown contacts away and stopped wearing my glasses. My frustration is that I didn't see a change. I honestly believed that I believed. How do I get it through my thick skull so I can see a change? I enjoy the show, learning a lot." And this is from Lacey. Jim?
Well, again, this is going to go back to, here's my answer. It's going to go back to reality. How real God is to you, because the secret to all change, you know, we call it grace, but some people would say the anointing, the presence of God, the glory of God. And that's the reason why even what I just mentioned about Solomon, why it actually has merit. Look at what he was asking for. He was asking for the relationship to be real with God, a heart that was discernible. And then God gave him everything else, because everything else always falls into place when there's a connection with God that's real. And this always goes to prayers that are answered or prayers that are not answered. It really does go back to how real the presence of God is. I remember years ago traveling with Brother Hagin, and I remember him making a comment that when the anointing of God Or you could say the grace of God was more real or more tangible. He always had more instantaneous results. Well, yeah. If you think of that statement, what is he really saying? The more real God is to you, then it's obvious the more tangible evidence you have of a real God.
What is the thing I always say to people in person? I never pray. Why would I pray? Why would I pray when the guys are with me?
Because the more real he becomes, the less you'll need to pray, because realness equals results.
You know, you might have a best friend or you might miss your children or your mom or dad or cousin or whatever, but you don't miss them when you're with them. You don't long for them. You don't miss them. You don't look for them. You don't have thoughts or memories of them, and there's not a lot of dreaming because you're in the moment.
Right.
You're
right.
There, they're there,
right.
You're together,
right.
And you're so busy enjoying it that you don't think about any other things happening.
Right. Now take this statement you made. You're in the moment. Now let's add this to the equation. I would dare say that because I was one myself, the majority of people that call themselves Christians don't know that there's a moment to be in.
No, they don't, because there's no room for a moment.
Right.
There's no room for God. There's no room for Jesus. There's no room for grace. There's no room for the Holy Spirit. There isn't room for any of the guys, because their lives, their mind, their heart is too busy trying to pay bills.
Right.
It's too busy trying to put food on the table. It's too busy trying to pay off the vacation home. It's too busy fighting with the neighbor. It's just too busy.
Well, then let's go a little further. So most don't know that there's a moment to have. Then there are those that know that there's a moment to have, but it pretty much is a monologue. It's like Jay Leno standing up and giving a monologue. It's not God speaking or being real to them. It's them trying to be real to God.
I think the saddest out of all the little scenarios we could conjure right now is not the person that doesn't know that there is a moment. It's the person who has experienced just one moment.
Right.
And they give it the tag, it was a miracle. It was a fluke. It was one in a million.
Mm-hmm.
I find that the most melancholy of situations, because you've had confirmation. You've had validation. There's no question in your heart and mind that there is a God, and that God is real, and grace can do wondrous, amazing things.
Mm-hmm.
And then it's gone. And you spend the rest of your life, or a good majority of it, wanting to see it again. And befuddled and sometimes angry, because situations and events occur that you're aware of in your life that most likely would be an easier fix for grace than the grace that you actually witnessed.
Right.
And you find yourself at a point when frustration sometimes thinking, well, I don't understand. Okay, I know you're real because I saw this happen. And that's the only explanation is that it was God. All right, well, you were there then. Where are you now? If you made that happen and that's not a big deal, why can't you fix this? Because this is nothing compared to that. And they find themselves arguing with their own reality.
Sure.
But they're talking in a circle because there's one thing missing, which is accountability and responsibility. Because we're right back square one with history. Somebody has to be wrong here. It's either the guys or it's us. But somebody is making a mistake.
Yeah. Yeah.
And what are we going to say?
Well, I was going to just add a third person. The first person I was talking about is, as I said, you know, the majority of people don't know that there's a moment to have. Then there's a second type of person who's in a very small minority that knows there's a moment to have, but it's more like a monologue. They talk to God, but they never seem to have any realness of God talking to them. Then there's a third type that's even smaller. But this is, you could almost say, the worst. And that is, they know there's supposed to be a moment. They even have some moments where they're conversing with God. God's conversing with them. They're getting information. They recognize His presence. But they don't know they're supposed to do something with it. So nothing gets accomplished in it. It's just that they're having a moment.
No application.
There's no application. They're not using grace to affect change in their life, to bring change in other people's lives.
It's like having a kitchen full of food, brand new pots and pans and dishes, and all new appliances, and you just stand in the kitchen and you don't cook a single thing.
Right. So most people don't know there's a kitchen. There's a few people that know there's a kitchen, but they look at it through a magazine and think how wonderful it will be to have a kitchen. And then a third group actually has a kitchen and it's stocked with food. And they can brag all they want to about their kitchen, but they're dying of starvation because they never cook.
It's like what I've always said, the best comparison between our world and the book and the guys is, what would you rather do? Would you rather worship the book that Betty Crocker wrote and memorize all the recipes and know that Betty Crocker's cookbook cover to cover? Or would you rather be in a kitchen cooking muffins with Betty?
Hey, see if you can weave this in, because I know you can. It's a part of our discussion. Some more history that you were giving about disposable and things that were made to last. Remember all of that?
Yeah.
That's really good for how we've actually intertwined that within what we call our religion.
We live in a disposable world now. You know, it's kind of funny. I was talking to somebody the other day, and they were bragging about how they were an environmentalist and how they protest this and they protest that and how they only buy a certain bottle of water, you know. Mm-hmm. And they says, are you an environmentalist? And I says, no, I'm not an environmental activist. I'm an active environmentalist. and they said, okay. And then I said, you're crazy. I says, you just told me that you buy bottled water. I said, I drink out of the cattle tank, I drink out of the pond, and I drink tap water. Oh, I can't believe you would do that. And I says, do you realize that when I was a little kid, anything that came in a bottle was made out of glass? And you returned it, and they gave you money. And then they washed, and they sterilized that bottle.
That's right.
And then they filled it up again, and they sold it to you.
Right, right.
I mean, that is the essence of recycling.
Yeah.
I says, you're buying a bottle that gets thrown away that can't be used again. And it's out of something that the environment can't destroy.
Right.
And then I talked about how people used to take pride and what they did. It didn't matter what they did. If they polished hubcaps, if they put the seats in a car, if they were a janitor, they took pride in what they did. And the products that were sold last a lifetime.
Right.
They didn't want it to fail. They didn't want it to break. And they never wanted it to wear out, because that was a sign of failure.
Yeah.
Nowadays, I mean, I really hate to admit it, but the reason this came up, and this is grace for you, I'm at Best Buy buying a new computer and some stuff with Dave and Barb's money. Thank you very much, by the way, to upgrade the radio station. And I said, how long will this computer last? And he says, well, you know, he says, computers now, they're programmed to start falling apart after 2 years. And I said, so that you'll buy another one, right? And he says, yeah. And I says, well, this isn't anything new, and it's not just with computers. And he says, what do you mean? And I says, well, we have several Ford trucks on the ranch. And I says, I have a new truck that was over $50,000. It's four-wheel drive. It's a one-ton, and it's the biggest, baddest truck that Ford built. And I says, and I also have another Ford truck from 1989. And he says, well, I was born in 91.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, my hat's older than you are. And I said, and what's real interesting about these two trucks, a brand new truck and a Ford truck from 1989. I says, do you know what's weird? The truck in 89 has three times as much metal. That's twice as thick as my new truck. The truck in 89 doesn't have any plastic. My new truck has plastic in it, on it, and all around it. And I said, and both trucks get the exact same gas mileage. And we live in a disposable world.
Yeah.
I mean, you never used to get a divorce. And if you did, you kept it a secret because it was like having a criminal record. Nowadays, people have no problems with getting divorces.
Right.
Everything is disposable. Everything is temporary. Everything can be replaced. It's like guarantees.
Warranties and guarantees.
Warranties and guarantees.
Yeah.
People would rather buy a product that has a lifetime guarantee instead of a product that has a 30-day guarantee. Even if the product that has a 30-day guarantee is one that is a well-known company that's been around for 100 years. And both items are priced exactly the same. They want the item that is guaranteed for life. And the reason is because it allows for a plan B.
Yeah,
it takes out the responsibility and accountability for making a mistake.
Well, doesn't this also hinder if people are so programmed to believe everything is going to fail, then don't they take that same skepticism right into their relationship with God and expect failure?
Well, it's in organized religion. It's one of the reasons why I slam organized religion and I refuse to use the word church.
Yeah.
And it's because they're not churches. They're not worshiping Christ. They're worshiping the business of religion.
Yeah.
They're worshiping a book instead of the man that the book refers to. That's ridiculous in my mind.
Yeah.
And it's fruitless. And if they think I'm wrong, if they think it's blasphemy, well, my prayers are answered. Grace is all around me. I can't swing a dead cat without hitting grace. And they're constantly working feverishly. And they don't have it.
Mm-hmm.
And there's no reason for it other than not willing to admit that you're wrong, that you've failed. You can't repent, you can't change directions until you realize the direction you're going is not the correct one. One of the first things I told you, you said, what's it like to go home? And I said, what? It's not very fun. It's not fun, it's depressing. Because you learn the ridiculousness of your ways.
Mm-hmm.
You learn that the greatest sin is not hitting someone or stealing something or doing something bad like that, that the greatest sin is not enjoying what you've had available since the day you were born.
Right. Yep. Yeah, that's becoming more... Of the frustrations that really I find myself at times having.
Sue in Livermore chimed in.
What'd she say?
They're chicken tacos.
Oh. Very good. So don't have to worry about fish.
I was worried. But, and then she has to add, they're chicken tacos, and I love a great fish taco.
See.
Well, see, she's you know, she doesn't want to be caught in the middle.
Right. She's being nice. Well, hey, I'm going to read from 2 Corinthians 6, verse 11 through chapter 7, verse 1. Out of the Message, it says, Dear Corinthians, I can't tell you how much I long for you to enter this wide open, spacious life. We didn't fence you in. The smallness you feel comes from within you. Your lives aren't small, but you're living them in a small way. I'm speaking as plainly as I can and with great affection. Open up your lives, live openly and expansively. Don't become partners with those who reject God. How can you make a partnership out of right and wrong? That's not a partnership, that's war. Is light best friends with dark? Does Christ go strolling with the devil? Do trust and mistrust hold hands? Who would think of setting up pagan idols in God's holy temple? But that's exactly what we are, each of us a temple in whom God lives. God himself put it this way, I'll live in them, move into them, I'll be their God, they'll be my people, so leave the corruption and compromise, leave it for good. says God. Don't link up with those who will pollute you. I want you all for myself. I'll be a father to you. You'll be my sons and daughters to me, the word of the Master God. And then chapter 7, verse 1 says this, with promises like this to pull us on, dear friends, let's make a clean break of everything that defiles or distracts us, both within and without. Let's make our entire lives fit and holy temples for the worship of God. Notice how Paul ends it by saying, let's make a clean break with everything that defiles or distracts us. This really has a lot to do with what we're sharing tonight. This history of those that made what? Separations, and those that continue to stay compromised and continue to stay corrupted by the things of the world.
The history of man states that negative energy, that Satan has been defeated, that he's on vacation till the book of Revelations occurs. So when people say that Satan's got me in a chokehold, the devil's messing with my mind, the devil's messing with my life, what they're really doing is they're deflecting their own responsibility for their actions and what's happening.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Because it's a lot easier to blame it on somebody else than it is to say, well, I came up with this thought, and this thought gave me a feeling, and the thought and the feeling gave me an action, and this is a reaction, so this is on me.
Right, right.
So that being said, where in that statement is there room for anybody to be wrong but ourselves?
Right.
For us. Can you hear her moaning?
Yeah, I can.
I don't know if it's coming through the radio or not, but I mean, the girl has got things to say tonight.
She's ready to do her part.
She is. We got a message here. It says, hey to Ranger Jim BJ from North Carolina. BJ, a couple questions for you. How long after you were healed and could walk again did you meet Jim? Let's see.
Two?
No.
It was 2011.
Was it 2011?
Yep.
Did we meet? God,
March,
it seems.
March 21st, 2011.
Man, it seems so much longer.
March 21st, 2011.
Then about 2 years, let's see, 2 years and 5 months. What did you hear from his message that made you think it would work for horses? And it says, Jim, looking forward to this week and in North Carolina, Tim Yokley. He's one of the guys that's going to buy you lots of food.
Well, a breakfast. We're going to have breakfast on
Monday.
He
said the world champion of breakfast.
Well, there you go.
I want pictures.
Okay.
Don't you have one of those machines that take pictures?
I do.
Okay. It says, what did you hear from his message that made you think it would work for horses? It sounds very cavalierish, but it's actually true, and it's correct for anybody that's listened to the show on any regular basis, and thank you very much, by the way. And welcome to the new listeners. It was just this fact that I know for a fact that animals are with God and are closer to God than any person could ever be, and that if it works for me and if it works for people, then it's 100% guaranteed for animals, and that all I needed to do was understand that and recognize it, and it would occur.
Mm-hmm.
It was just that simple. I've never met a horse that I didn't like. I can't say that about people. I've never met a horse that wanted to hurt another person or another horse. Can't say that about people. I've never met a horse that literally woke up one morning and thought it would be a good idea to destroy things instead of enjoy things. I can't say that. I can't say that about people. People do that every day.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why I've always spent my time with horses more than people, and why I prefer the company of my dog to most people I've met, because They don't have agendas.
Mm-hmm.
They, you know, they are. No matter how hot it is, how dirty it is, how cold it is, no matter what kind of mood I'm in, this dog sitting next to me is always happy to be with me.
Mm-hmm.
And no matter how tired or dirty, how hot or cold it is, there isn't one single horse that doesn't enjoy the company. There are dress codes to go in buildings around here.
Yeah, yeah. That's right.
You know, no shoes, yeah. No shirt, no service. I went into the diner the other day, and I said, I'm really sorry, I'm kind of dirty. And they said, well, come on in. You're not the first rancher that's come in here dirty today. You know, because I thought right. I might be, you know, the place I took you to.
Yeah, right.
You love that place.
Yeah, it's nice.
We'll have to go there again.
Yep.
And, you know, I just, it's that kind of things. See, limits, boundaries, parameters. The more controlled you are, the more limits and boundaries, the more things that you find inacceptable, the more things that you think are just wrong, and the more that you think that things should be changed, more than likely, you're not going to have very much luck finding grace.
Right, right. Yeah, even something you just said there, I'll relate it to, and of course, this does a history lesson too, but you know, you think about how many people don't realize that we're being controlled in this country, the propaganda that's in this country, the things that are not told us. You were just mentioning earlier how the certain channels that you usually end up watching as far as news is concerned, because they show you exactly what's taking place, where things are all edited here in America. So we understand what we're being told to understand. Well, if we don't know that that's true about just the life that is of this world, what's the possibility that we don't understand how controlled that we're being as far as the things of God?
Yeah.
It really goes hand in hand, doesn't it?
It does. That's a very good point. This is so the perfect test message.
What's that?
It says, just wanted to say good job with the socks, Jim, and then there's a smiley face.
Well,
do you know who that's from?
Is that from Amy?
It's got to be from Amy, the cowgirl that checked your socks.
Oh, that's great.
Well, yeah, it says, just wanted to say, isn't that funny?
Yeah.
I don't know. I doubt very seriously she's listening to the show, but she knows because she's been outside the barn before.
Right.
You know, tapping into the internet.
Right.
To you know.
To your Wi-Fi.
To the Wi-Fi out of the station. So I know I don't think she's listening, but she knows the show's running. I think that, see, she's a clever girl.
That's pretty funny.
I don't hire dumb people, you know.
Yeah.
I don't want to be around them.
Yeah, that's good.
You want to say something to music?
Sure.
Wait a minute. I got to get there.
Ranger is so ready.
I'm telling you, she's been moaning.
Yep.
I mean, she's got, the girl's got things to say. I hope
she hungry?
Well, she might be. She had a mouse earlier. She swallows them whole.
Mm.
She brings them to me and I have to say, okay, yes or no. Because otherwise she'd be eating mice every day. I let her eat about a mouse a week.
Huh.
I don't want her to lose her girlish figure. Huh. There's a tip for you, ladies. Don't eat too many mice.
Well, we've had a great time tonight, and I'm going to ask that the Lord would just cause all of you who are listening to just be filled with His grace, that your minds would be free to experience God, that your hearts would be open to be touched by His love, that there's no sickness or disease or your physical bodies that need all of your attention, because God's already rid you of all of that. Begin to enjoy Him and watch these things just dissipate and disappear. Old song used to sing it this way: turn your eyes upon Jesus, look full in His wonderful face, and the things of this world will grow strangely dim in the light of His glory and grace. So be blessed tonight. Be blessed this week. Let us know the testimonies that you're experiencing of God and His grace and His glory. And let this message sink into your heart. You'll find yourself withdrawing from the world and experience more of God. Amen.
I thought that was pretty good. I'm glad it's the end of the show, because I'd be curious to see how many emails and texts we got about women keep your girlish figure, don't eat very many mice.
Yeah, that's right.
You know, a guy named Ed Salt just sent, it says, tell BJ it's going to be way better than this picture looks. I hope so. This is Ed in North Carolina. He just sent a picture of the most bizarre food. It's like a burnt piece of toast with peanut butter and a fried egg on it.
Well, it's going to be better than that, right?
I like the way you say that, right? You know what? I was kind of envious of this breakfast, but after seeing these photos, I'm never going to go to North Carolina if this was what they eat, burnt toast with peanut butter and an egg on it.
Oof. I'm sure it's going to be great.
And then the other two items, I don't even know what they are. Look at this. Come look at this picture. I don't even know how to describe that. What are those two things? I'm not kidding, am I? That is burnt toast with peanut butter and a fried egg on it.
It looks maybe like some type of donut or something, some of the other things.
I don't know what it is, but I mean, I don't know. I'm starting to feel sorry for people in North Carolina. They're eating some...
Hey, when I've gone there, great food. So I'm looking for it to be good.
All I know is what I just saw, and what I just saw is, you know.
Right.
It's just one more reason to have steak and eggs, as far
sure.
as I can see.
Sure.
I want to welcome all the new listeners out there that are listening tonight. And also, it's time for us to acknowledge all the people around the globe that listen to your show.
Yes.
We haven't done that in a while.
No.
The United States, Canada, Japan, United Kingdom, Australia, the Republic of Korea, Saudi Arabia, Colombia, the Netherlands, Mexico, Argentina, Germany, Fred in Germany.
That's great.
Brazil, Indonesia, Ireland, Sweden, Pakistan, India, New Zealand, Poland, Italy, the People's Republic of China, Singapore, Hong Kong, Croatia, Hungary, Chile, Puerto Rico, Morocco, and France. How about that, huh?
It's pretty good.
That's getting out there.
It is. It's great.
I like it, isn't it?
I do, too. That's
a long list of listeners.
Too.
And remember, folks, it'll take me about 15, 20 minutes to get tonight's broadcast up and streaming. But until it does, last week's show will be playing. What do you think? Did we do all right?
I think we did really fine.
I hope yep. we made somebody smile.
Oh, I think so.
And we'll see here next Tuesday. You're going to be here next Tuesday night, right?
I will, yes.
All right. And remember, folks, to take care of yourselves and your pets. Ranger? What else? Oh, good girl. And remember, folks, dog spelled backwards is... Good night, everybody.
Good night.